She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And hopefully every show you listen to, you have a takeaway that you want to think about more, that you want to learn about more, that you want to engage with more, because that's my purpose for showing up today. So our show today is made possible to the generous support of the Chapman Automotive Group, doing their share, showing they care. We thank them for their support of the Mrs. Green's World mission and vision, and for everything they do to make our community and a world a better place, because indeed they do. A special shout out to their Community Green team, which is, they're just working miracles throughout this community and in turn the world, and I'm barely kidding. Okay, everybody, get your thinking caps on, as they used to say to me in grammar school. The name of our show today is Creating a Culture of Peace Worldwide. And I invite all of you to take a breath and think about what that means. And then tell me honestly if you can think of anything more important to actually think about in this time, in these very challenging and fear-based times. Joining me for this next hour is Leslie Meehan. She is the co-founder and council member of the Gaia Field Project, which develops subtle activism practices, and we're going to talk about what that is, theories and programs, and works with like-minded groups around the world to create local, national, and global networks of subtle activists to support a shift to a planetary culture of peace. I cannot think of anything that soothes me more, given the latest round of news I watched several weeks ago. Leslie is an interspiritual minister, leadership consultant, and co-creator of collaborative networks committed to community healing and transformation. Think about what's gone on in this country in the past several years, vis-a-vis the need for community healing. She has over 25 years of experience in strategic planning, intuitive process, systems architecture, and management in business and in nonprofits. As a subtle activist, Leslie's practice spans the spiritual, consciousness, and indigenous spectrum. As an eco-social activist, Leslie founded the Thriving Resilient Communities Collaboratory. I love that, Leslie. I loved it. Collaboratory. Whoa, I love it when people make up words. Whose network leaders fund and build sustainable local community systems in hundreds of North American communities. That, my friend, was a long intro, but I wanted to get it all in to lay the groundwork for just this wonderful guest. Thanks for being here, Leslie.
I'm just so happy to be here. Thank you for having me. I just have this huge grin on my face listening to your intro to the Mrs. Green Show. So delighted to be here.
It's awesome. Like, every time I say it, I put a smile on my face. We don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And
love,
I think
it.
It's just every guest, I think, that really stops and listens to that says, wow, yeah, that's what I'd like these people to do, is think about what we're going to talk about and then make up your own mind. I don't want to be a yeller and tell people what to think. So a good place to start is, in the best way that you can possibly do this, describe what the Gaia Field Project is, its purpose, its mission, the vision. Take your time and let us, you know, lay the groundwork.
Oh, my. Nice little small question there. Okay.
I have ultimate confidence you can do this from the bottom of your heart. Yes.
You just gave me kind of an open field to tell a juicy story.
I did. You go,
great.
Girl.
All right. Here we go. So come on with me on this journey. The Gaia Field Project is to say what it is and then how I got there. It's a community of people around the world that uses what we call subtle or spiritual or consciousness-based practices for collective social healing and transformation. So it's beyond just the personal. And so subtle practices would be things like prayer, meditation, mindfulness, yoga, Sufi dancing. But instead of having personal intentions, we have social intentions, like healing after the Fukushima nuclear disaster or the 2005 tsunami, or creating a transpartisan wisdom space for the U.S. presidential elections, or the global climate change negotiations. Those are all themes of global meditations that we've hosted over the last 10 years. And it's just such a joy for me to be part of this community of people. I can't tell you how much it means to me to be meeting by phone and in person with, you know, beloved friends from around the world every week. There, our council of leaders of subtle activist networks has been attuning together. We call it, it's our form of meditating together every week since 2008. And we have monthly leader meditations that we do, and then quarterly and annual meditations that we do with people all around the world. The biggest one is called Be the Peace. On September 21st, which is the International Day of Peace.
Yes, yes.
We
I heard about that at the UN.
People. Yes. Yes, well, two of the Guyfield Council members are very, very active at the UN. Avon Madison helped create the International Day of Peace around the world. So it's just such a powerful experience to be sitting in the love field of healing and light around the world.
And
I
just
say
much
more about what we do together and how I got there, but let me just pause and see what question you have
the
right
question
now.
It's not so much a question, but when I was preparing for the show, I would call it going deeper. It might make some of our listeners feel uncomfortable, and if it does, I encourage you to listen harder. That's what I always do. When I'm starting to get a little squirmy, it's like, what about this is creating that reaction in me? And the thing that came to me is the absolutely internationally, spiritually recognized leader is the Dalai Lama. And I know hundreds of thousands of people get who he is, what he's about, and all these things that you're talking about of the spiritual consciousness and prayer and meditation and yoga. I mean, he is absolutely someone you could point to that is reflective of what you are, your purpose and your mission. Is that fair and accurate?
Yes, the Dalai Lama is actually somebody that many of us have seen and practiced with. Thich Nhat Hanh, I call the Vietnamese Dalai Lama. He's another global teacher and healer of global ethics. And one of the things Thich Nhat Hanh says is that the next Buddha is the Sangha, or the community, where we have to learn ourselves how to be the Dalai Lamas and the Buddhas and the Jesuses in human form, walking with our feet on the earth in our daily lives with our family and friends and communities around us. That's what global healing is going to take.
And do we ever need it?
Taking.
And if people do research, and I know that there are people on my show that then go to the websites and do more, but what struck me is the people who are on the council and what they're doing now is really impressive and blew my mind. But to me, the big thing that caught my attention is the backgrounds as they were moving along their journey from what I call more traditional roles, like the founder, and I wasn't sure how to say, is it David Nicholl?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He's a former environmental lawyer from Australia. Another member was the director of Center for Executive Development at the Haas School of Business at UC Berkeley. Another one was a family real estate business and later an engineering design. She designed power distribution systems. These are hardcore linear people, as I would say, an entrepreneur and a software engineer. Is there
that's
as
me?
You are one
I'm
of those.
I started out
you
as a hardcore linear person.
You have a master's degree in what? Electrical engineering.
Electrical engineering.
Oh yeah,
from Stanford.
Perfect.
Yes.
from Stanford, everybody are listening. So perfect right. segue to, oh yeah, the thing I'll do next is become a council member for the Gaia Field Project. You have to talk a little bit about this kind of journey. And to me, the best way to do that is to talk about your personal story, because that's so relatable. So how did you go from head to heart to hands? The Silicon Valley, no less.
Yes, can't wait to share that story, because
I can't wait to hear it.
Quite a long, strange journey, but it's been a central journey of my whole life. I want to bring my kids into the mix. My kids just spoke up and said, "We're important too."
Yes,
and they
yes.
are.
Yes, and it is it's a critical part of your journey.
Yeah. So I did start out with the linear, straight, and narrow, you know, lots of success at Stanford, and then I worked in Silicon Valley for Bell Labs and IBM and other smaller companies that you may not have heard of. But even while I was good at that work and enjoyed it, it didn't have enough meaning in life for me. It didn't really, you know, help me answer the question, why am I here? What are we doing here on this beautiful blue-green planet? What's life all about? So even when I was managing, I took 2 leaves of absences and backpacked around the world a couple times and just spent time out in nature and with people from different cultures and just kind of drank in the just amazing people and cultures and planet that we're blessed to live on. And when I came back from those trips and got married and had my son, who's my oldest child, I quit working in Silicon Valley because it just didn't have enough heart in an engineering career for me to feel complete. And so then I was a stay-at-home mom for a while and started working in our local community for a community foundation nonprofit. And I just continued my spiritual journey just in the background, you know, between the diapers and
you know, and all those
feeding.
Great jobs you get to have as a mom, which
exactly.
are at times humbling.
Every day life.
Yes.
This is the spiritual path of people who are walking the world. They get to do the laundry and meditate, you know.
Exactly.
Time, and that's so important because that makes it real, grounded in real life. So I was having experiences in my life that my scientific background could not explain.
Love it.
That I could not understand.
Right.
And everything from, you know, synchronicities that would just blow your mind about meeting people out around the world,
yes.
that knew people that I knew and had knew my father, and just like crazy things, and walking on fire. I went to one workshop where because I do everything with a scientific mind, right? I haven't lost my scientific
right,
mind.
Right, right. It's in your DNA.
It's in my DNA.
But that's good. That's so good for the foundation of this show. It's like the science
yeah.
is still there, so go ahead.
The science is still there, but, you know, I was having experiences that the science couldn't explain. Like, I went to a workshop where one of the things that we did was we walked on fire. And I was like, yeah, right, okay.
I just can't even get my head around that, but I believe you, if that makes sense.
I watched.
Whoa.
I observed, right, because I'm a scientific observer, so I watched the people who were going to host the ceremony build the fire from scratch, watched it burn down. You know, we were all there. There were about 30 of us. The fire was probably about 30 feet across. I mean, it took me seven or eight steps, something like that, to go across it. And I did. I walked across this fire that was red hot coals. I'd watched them burn down from a big bonfire down to the coals, and they were blazing hot. And nothing happened to my body at all. And I remember walking back and forth several times because I didn't want to give myself a chance afterwards. Oh, you know, you just...
Oh, my gosh.
So I went back and forth several times so that my brain could not say later that it didn't happen. And same thing, I had another experience when I was traveling in Peru, where I was just in a tour group, and we went to a shamanic ceremony where people were singing and chanting to celebrate Mother Earth. And all of a sudden, I'm just sitting there, you know, no drugs or anything. I'm just like minding my own business, sitting there in the
drugs
ceremony.
Drugs were not involved in the making of this story.
Not at all. Not at all. This is just like little old me sitting there. And all of a sudden, I'm traveling down what feels like I'm swimming through the earth.
Love
and
it.
I had these experiences down there, which I came back out after the ceremony was over, and I was like, what just happened? And I could see, I feel kind of crazy talking about this on a radio show, but this is the honest truth. I could see light streaming off the end of my fingertips, and I had never seen that before.
And where were you in Peru? I'm very curious, because my journey to becoming Mrs. Green started deep, deep in the rainforest in Peru. And when I tell the story, I struggle. And I say, you know, there was no parting of the Red Sea and there were no tablets at the end. But it was kind of like that, because I was a high-powered executive with a company, you know, doing social services all over the United States. So I was not on the woo-woo side of my evolution at that point, as I call it.
No. So, it changes you, doesn't it?
It changes you. You come back and you say, I'm not from around here or something like that.
No.
And what can I do with this information that I have been blessed with?
Exactly. So that was one of those experiences where I'm, you know, with my scientific brain, I'm moving my hands around in and out of shadow to make sure it's not some sort of optical illusion again. So that,
but your scientific brain can tell you we are all energy. I don't think people dispute that. We are energy. So that to me makes such sense, because that's energy moving
and that's
around.
That's how I eventually came to be able to make sense of it all. Because what happened after all of these series of unexplainable things was, I said, I have to go back to school. And I found
love
a mind body heart school in San Francisco called the California Institute of Integral Studies, and that was even a synchronistic thing of how I found that place, because I'd never heard of it before. And in the space of 2 weeks, it showed up three times in my life, in the mail out of the blue, and with a couple other people told me about it, and I was like, okay, I'm listening. So I started taking classes one at a time, and I ended up getting my PhD in technically philosophy, cosmology, and consciousness. I say effectively it was in community resilience, but what that whole great journey did for me was it helped me connect my heart and my mind and my body with a worldview that could, using exactly that energetic model, explain how all this stuff could be. And I actually, in my dissertation, I wrote a chapter that looked at scientific quantum theory and spiritual practice and tied them together in something that I call unergy theory, which we don't have to get into here. But the point is, there is both a scientific and a spiritual understanding of us as people as being like human energy antennas. There's data that my friends at HeartMath have that say that our bodies have tangible energy fields that go 3 feet out from our bodies that are measurable just like a cell phone. And there's a lot of research going on into this about how we are, and we're our little engines. We're a little
a lot of scientific research, and there are machines now that can catch it on camera. It's like, come on, people, you can deny it all you want. It's uncomfortable for a lot of people, and I think in the beginning it was for me. Now, the big shock for you...
It took me 15 years.
I think probably we were all on the journey since birth, but it's that point of consciousness. So the big shockeroo is that we are already at the first break. So when you talk about time flying, it's like, what? So we are going to go with the first break, and everybody, stay here with me, because when we come back, I want to talk with Leslie about why relate this to Mrs. Green's world. The solution to climate change is not technical. And you'll have to stay here with me to find out what her belief is that the solution to climate change is going to convince the doubting Thomases in you. We'll be right back, everybody. Stay here with me. More about creating a culture of peace worldwide.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Pacific time at mrsgreensworld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at mrsgreensworld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio app. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. We are a proud member of the Dream Vision 7, Glimmerglass, Green Radio Divas, Blog Talk, and Speak Up Radio Networks. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@mrsgreensworld.com. We'd love to hear from you. And now, more with Mrs. Green.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to, and we're certainly inviting you to think a little bit deeper, think a little bit harder, and have a little bit of fun with it. It's not a heavy message. It's all about creating a culture of peace. And I want to, you know, talk about that. Can you imagine if everybody started talk about creating a culture of peace worldwide, especially after they listen to any newscast on a traditional news station? So Leslie is the co-founder and council member of the Gaia Field Project. And it's a project which develops subtle activism practices, theories, and programs, and works with like-minded groups to co-create local, national, and global networks of subtle activists to support a shift to a planetary culture of peace. Leslie is an interspiritual minister, leadership consultant, and co-creator of collaborative networks committed to community healing and transformation. And I believe that we have never needed people like you more than we do right this minute, Leslie. So thanks for saying yes to whatever this calling is. It matters. So how do you relate it to, and you know, in the notes you sent me for possible inclusion on the show, you said the solution to climate change, it's not technical, it's love-social adaptive. There's doubting Thomases out there that'll listen to this, maybe click off, maybe say, oh, I can't wait to hear how she answers that one. Talk about that. How is Mother Earth love and respect for each other the answer to climate change?
So when I started that PhD program, I went into it with my linear head and said, okay, I'm here to study what the heck is going on in the world, figure out what the solution is, and dedicate myself to making it happen.
Right.
And in that journey, I discovered through my own experience of awakening to the energetics of our evolution as what I call Holo sapiens, as being part of an interconnected interbeing, I discovered that it's our broken connections with each other that is really the problem. And that's why the solution to climate change is not a head-oriented, technical knowledge design problem as much as we would like to think it is. It's really a social problem. What the climate change scientists, one of my friends, Karen O'Brien, is one of the panel members on the International Panel for Climate Change, who's responsible for climate adaptation. And she will say that she's the one who says in those words directly that the solution to climate change is not technical, that we have to start recognizing that this is an adaptive problem, that's a complex social problem. And if we don't start looking at it as a social problem, that we're bound to fail, because we have to deal with the social issues that are at the root cause of poverty and violence and separation and treating the earth like its resources for our use rather than a part of our body. You know, the air that we breathe, the food that we eat, the water that we drink, that's the earth.
And it's so interesting to me in doing this interview and thinking about it as I researched it, my journey as Mrs. Green, which is the most unlikely of stories. I mean, you know, 35 years in health and human services, and then, oh, I think I'll start a radio show about the, you know, the planet. Of course, it makes sense to me now. But when I first started, I talked about plastic in the oceans and plastic bags and, you know, body products, things we're putting onto our bodies and the clean things we're cleaning the home with, all of which matter. But it's kind of like you're reeling it in to get to the core, which is what really touched me about your offer to talk about things on this show. Because what it really boils down to is you have to come from a place of consciousness and caring, and you start caring about Mother Earth. And then it just follows. And also the social justice issues. I seem to be incorporating that in every show with every show guest. They're talking about these social issues, the marginalized communities, how the people that are the poorest are going to be hurt the most with climate change because they can't afford to move. All the rich people will just go up the mountain and buy a bigger house. And that's a really, you know, pretty concrete truth. So when you talk about the heart coming first, can you see from where you sit on the council and your other council members more of a shift? People, you know, companies, big companies, publicly traded world giants are putting in nap rooms and yoga classes and incorporating spiritual components in their training. What are you seeing? What are some of the practices that you've observed that strengthen the heart?
Well, the core practice that calls us on the Gaia Field Project is kind of the most similar to meditation and mindfulness, which are the practices that I see showing up the most in the corporate sector and also the government sector. You know, some of my friends are part of mindfulness practices at the UN, for example. And they come from, you know, I like to quote Einstein, that no problem can be solved by the consciousness that created it. And what subtle activism does is it's true that subtle activism practices shifting consciousness at a deep level on the inside to lead to systemic change on the outside. And so it's a way to bridge the consciousness movement, the meditation, mindfulness movement, and movements for peace and social justice and health and environmental sustainability, just like you're talking about. Because we have to find a way on the inside to develop our social wisdom, our group field coherence in scientific terms, to solve our social problems. Because otherwise, when we look at everything that's going on in the world, we want to just work hard to do big things. But does that hard work really make a difference at the root cause of our social diseases of, you know, poverty and fear and addiction and war and genocide? What does it really take to show up with love and compassion and healing on the inside, to go to the depths at the causal level to be able to shift the whole system? And what we have to do is shift it. The subtle activism work helps us shift our imagination of what's possible and what kind of world we can live in. So it's simple, but it's profound, because, like, for example, if you want to end hunger, you have to really sit with where is the place that hunger comes from, because we're living in a worldview that's full of hunger. So how do we shift our perspective, our inner being and knowing, to a place where hunger is an idea of the past? It's gone. It's not part of our reality anymore. Until we can shift to where hunger's not part of our reality anymore, we're going to be creating projects and ideas that still have hunger in them. We have to get beyond hunger consciousness to create a world without hunger. Does that make sense?
It makes so much sense to me, and I can give you the most practical application about community networking and resilience and building strong communities. I mean, I live in the United States of America in a city of 1 million people, and 1 in 3 children goes to bed food insecure, and 1 in 5 goes to bed hungry. And I want to say something like, are you kidding me right now? And then the other part of me knows that 40% of the food grown in the world is never eaten. So there's, it is a perfect example of that consciousness and the transformation that could easily happen if the networks were put in place, you know. And basically, a lot of that is just a distribution problem. That's all. It's a food distribution problem because the farmers have to move and they have to ship and they have to put it in the grocery stores, and what's ever left is there to rot. So you couldn't have picked a better opportunity for me to bounce on it for healing and transformation because of my background in social services. No kid in Pima County should ever go to bed hungry. And there are enough of us that are working to see what we can do for our food distribution systems to change that and change it quickly. I mean, it's, you know, I kind of want to say it's disgusting, but that doesn't sound very mindful. So it's like, but well, it's outrageous to me.
It's outrageous. Ugh. And what subtle activism says, and it's not just subtle activism as a theory, you know, systems architects like Donella Meadows will tell you that when you're trying to find leverage points in a complex system, you've got to find the place where a small shift can ripple through to everything.
Love
and
it. Donella, love that visual. Oh.
There's a whole paper that of Donella's that I love on leverage points, and what she says is that the least effective leverage points are the parameters and standards that we spend 95% of our time on. They're not at the root because they're still manipulating things within the same system, and the basic assumptions remain the same. The second most effective leverage point is changing your mindset, like about, you know, hunger, for example. And the number one leverage point is the power to transcend paradigms, where we have to get in the imagination of no one going hungry, hunger in Tucson. And it's that kind of magical, mysterious place that's the shift in consciousness that can ripple through out into those distribution systems. The subtle activism, it opens our collective mind and creativity into a not knowing. And in our culture, we like to be hands-on and linear and tend to think of this creative, intuitive space as ethereal and not real, but actually it's the most causal level that can bring in the radical degree of systemic change that we need to shift the paradigm of the systems that we're kind of caught in without even recognizing it.
And you really do talk a lot about, in the writing and on the page for the Gaia Field Project, a lot about the head. It's the connection between the head and the heart. And I wonder what your thoughts are on, you know, I'm using myself as an example because that's all I get to use in terms of my life's journey. But the more I go into this journey, the farther I travel, the answers become in some ways more complicated. People want a silver bullet. You know, what's the answer to this? And the answer to me is for me to continue on the journey and to love what I'm learning. How big a part is that to become a person that really is, you know, body, mind, spirit. There's a reason those words are all together. What about lifelong learning to connect your head to your heart? Because it's hard sometimes.
That is the journey that I am on, and the my friends and companions on the journey are convinced that being, you know, practicing presence, you know, Otto Scharmer is another.
It's really hard. Practice the presence.
When I first heard that, I'm like, what does that mean? Well, the best thing for me has been to have a group of people that I'm just like exercise. I'm much more consistent at exercising when I go to a gym and they yell at me if I don't show up.
It's the tribe. It's the tribe.
It's the tribe, exactly. And so I have several subtle activism tribes that not only bring me joy in my life, but they help keep my feet to the practice fire. Guyfield is a main community, and the Earth Treasure Vase community is another one. And like I said, the Guyfield Council practices attuning together every week, and then we have a monthly rhythm and a quarterly rhythm. And we, you mentioned that I also host a network of leaders doing resilience work on the ground in communities all across the country. And we connect this group work, that group, the collaboratory works, because we have a heart space practice where we really care about trust and you know, authentic relationships within the community. We do have a light meditation practice that some of us do more than others, but all of our meetings, we have a moment of silence, we have gratitude, we bring that subtle activism, mystery, love into the heart of everything that we do together. And when you come from that place, that love infuses all the actions that we take and how we look out for each other, and we care for each other, and we share what we have. There's lots of examples that are coming to mind.
Well,
I don't know if you
my
want to
brain
go down that
gets,
path.
Yeah, my brain gets flooded because when I was preparing, I mean, I get into it. I get into it, and I put myself in the space. And who comes up first in my consciousness but Nelson Mandela? Like, I'm telling you, when I think about what they did to him, and then he comes out as a proponent for peace, not sure I would have been on that path if I were in his shoes. And then Gandhi. These are people that are not woo-woo, you know, oh, they're in the spiritual realm conversations, but indeed they are. And that's what I like about, you know, peel that back, peel back the mystery. Don't call it woo-woo. Just call it, we are made up of our mind, our bodies, and our spirits. So those to me are really good examples of who are you talking about? Like, what do you mean? Give me an example. And the Dalai Lama, I think the Pope is a light worker. He's doing so many things to bring consensus and move thought forward. I mean, that's kind of the one of my definitions, is you're moving thought forward. So, and you know, I read Yes, that magazine. After I had David Corten on the show, it's like, that magazine makes me think. I'm like, wow, I didn't think about that. No, I have to think about that. And it's as someone's in her third act, as I so lovingly call it, you really want to start thinking about what your legacy is and what kind of difference you want to make, and take note of these things. We're going to have to take another break. I don't apologize for my rants anymore, because I used to, and it's always all about the guests, but there's a part of me, especially in a show like this, that I need to come out more, you know, and be a little bit more vocal about my journey and my personal experience with these things, because they're real. And Leslie, looking at the world and what, you know, regular TV shows us, it's fear-based, it's hate-based, it's disgusting-based. I don't know what else to call it. So if you're going to go on your lifelong journey, don't do it with the evening news. That would be my my comment before the break. I mean, it's just, I'm in a news blackout. So everybody, stay here with me. More about this incredible opportunity to open our hearts, think globally, act locally, start making a difference in some subtle way. It's powerful stuff. We'll be right back with Leslie Meehan. I can't wait for the next segment. Stay here with me.
Mrs. Green's world's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody, and thanks for joining us. The name of our show today is Creating a Culture of Peace Worldwide. Joining for me for this hour is Leslie Meehan. She's the co-founder and council member of the Gaia Field Project, a project which develops subtle activism practices, theories, and programs, and works with like-minded groups to co-create, I love that word, co-create, local, national, and global networks of subtle activists to support a shift to a planetary culture of peace. Leslie is an interspiritual minister, leadership consultant, and co-creator of collaborative networks committed to community healing and transformation, and you've got to love that. And Leslie, I just like to start with a comment about, you know, you talk about these little knocking at the door of your being. And there's a woman here named Teresa Cowan Jones who's really cultivating sacred space practice that's growing like crazy. And it's in our city council office on Sundays. And we have been designated as a city of compassion. So these things are not just out there. They're happening right here, which is a perfect segue to what you call the hands component, how people can start where they live at home, where our communities are. You know, give us some stories about how that hand part, hands on or hands up, not hand out, can work.
Great. I also want to reinforce what you just said before the break about being a life-loving learner through programs like yours. I just love what you're doing.
Thank you for that.
Magazine. It's so true. I want everybody to listen to Mrs. Green's all the time because she's a important, you know, life-affirming shot in the arm here.
And I'm counting on you to tell your Gaia Field Project buddies that Mrs. Green's World is in the house.
I already have.
Okay,
yes.
Good. I figured.
But we met at another annual conference called Bioneers, which is an important place to go. Like not the evening news, like you just said. And there are lots of networks, like the Pachamama Alliance, that have online workshops that you can learn a lot from, just online
major part of my journey, Pachamama,
yep,
in the beginning.
Pachamama, Up to Us. There, Pachamama is part of the collaboratory that I was talking about of networks of organizations that are working in many places on community health and justice and resilience. And it's not a simple bullet solution, because healthy food is connected to healthy water, is connected to healthy energy and healthy soil and people being able to get along together. So it's a multi-issue, multi-stakeholder problem. But the good news is that we can build community health and resilience right where we live. You mentioned compassion. That's one of the networks that I'm part of, Tucson being a city of compassion. There's a network called the Compassion Games. So you can, yourself personally or your team or your business can join the Compassion Games the next Games are in September. They're the antidote to the Hunger Games. They literally started in Louisville, where the mayor of Louisville challenged the mayor of Seattle to be the most compassionate city in the world. And
like,
that whole
seriously,
story.
Tell people yeah. that. That's the level that it's at which it's happening.
Well,
the mayors.
There's hundreds of teams around the world. I think it's in 34 countries now, 1.5 million volunteer hours over the last few years. That's a big network. There's another network called Transition that's all around the world, and you can go to their website, Transition US, and start a Transition Streets program in your neighborhood. That one is food, energy, water, reducing waste, and building community. Right now, you can go to communityresiliencechallenge.org through June 7th and register to do something in your life or in your family or in your community to build resilience where you live.
And it's called communityresilience.org?
communityresiliencechallenge.org.
Okay.
So my point is that there are, where you live, there is bound to be some group of people that's already working on building a healthier place where you live or a more resilient
totally,
place where you live.
Totally. And I mentioned one here, so go ahead.
Yeah, you can look them up and join them. And depending on what level you're working at, I'm talking about individuals, but you could go to thrivingresilience.org. That is the website where the movement leaders that I work with come together to strategize and think together on behalf of the whole country. And there's groups that are working at a bigger systemic level at regions and shifting how public decisions are made using participatory democracy and building new alternative currency systems. So there's a lot of systemic change that's happening too. So if you have an organization or a network that you're or a business of any kind that you want to be an anchor organization for building peace where you live, there's lots of good work going on that you can join, and you're probably doing things already, and other people can learn from you. But the trick is to find each other, building community connections, connecting community to more of itself in collaboration is the most important practice in the outer world that we can do.
And there's things that I just want to talk about for people, the concrete things. So Tucson blessedly got designated as a city of gastronomy by UNESCO. Well, I wasn't even quite sure what that meant when it first happened. The only city in the United States. And it isn't about good restaurants, which is what I thought a lot of people thought. It's about our food supplies, about really being innovative when it comes to the danger of monoculture for crops and why diversification and local seeds and native seed search matters. It's about all of the groups that are organized around farms and creating diversity in those areas. I mean, very, very grassroots.
And that's great.
It is so great. And the first one in the United States. So that's it's the application of what you're talking about. There are multi-stakeholders. It's multi-issues. It's inclusion. Mm-hmm. There are social justice issues. We are so close to Mexico. And what does that look like? And what are we doing about fair wages? So when I was reading the preparation for this, it's all over the place. If you look, there's something for you that will get you excited, I believe. And we have Living Streets Alliance, which, you know, events were dying here. Tired old parades, and oh my gosh, I can't even stand to go to that. And then the Living Streets Alliance comes along, and it's all about living streets and making alliances and communities connecting and getting out. We close off major thoroughfares 2 times a year so everybody can get out and bike the city. That creates incredible community. So things like that, I see just affirmations for what your work has been dedicated to all over here and other places that I go.
That's great news about what's going on in Tucson. I have to come learn from you guys about the Living Streets Alliance.
If you Google that, you'll not believe it. And the people are so passionate. And it's all about families, little kids and teenagers and young parents and grandmas like me that just go there and I baby watch. I get high just on seeing all of that. So what do you say to someone that's listening and it's really hitting them? It's their time. This message showed up at exactly the right moment they need to hear it. Where do they start? Sometimes starting on your journey, the next step is so overwhelming and so big. Do you have some thoughts to share with people that say, I like this. I want to learn more. I want to be a community activist. Or, I want to be known as a compassionate person. And I'm going to stop watching the news. That would be my advice, the first step. Stop watching the news. But what would you say? Because you have a lot of head, heart, hands, personal story about this.
Well, two things. I would say to find your tribe where you live.
Love it.
That's the first thing. Find the people who can support your subtle practice, your meditation, your mindfulness practice, and who will support you and join you in building health and resilience in the active hands-on world too.
I love that.
That's
answer.
Such an important piece.
And the reason I love it is because what you're advocating is find what's right for me. And it might not be out pounding a drum or getting at the head of the parade. It could be just a subtle shift, and you're beginning to connect with a network that is going to make your heart sing. So I love that. Okay, what's your second one? I'm writing these down, man. This is like a Twitter fantasy.
Where you live.
Connect.
Whatever that is, take your next step in finding your tribe. And then the other step that's been important for me is to find a larger tribe. Either every person kind of has, in my experience, a sense of the bigger world that is right for them. Maybe it's their region, maybe it's their state, maybe it's their country, maybe it's the world, but whatever it is, make a personal connection to people at that level. Find your tribe at that level. And the ways that I have done that have been doing the learning, like we've talked about on this program, listening to Mrs. Green's Reading Yes, the Pachamama Org website, conferences like Bioneers, not the evening news, and also look at some of these other programs that we've talked about. Who are the people that are doing the work that you care about in the bigger world? It might be saving elephants. It might, whatever it is, whatever you're passionate about, find your tribe that's doing somewhere so that doing that work somewhere bigger so that you feel like you're living your passion both at home where you live and in the bigger world.
And I will tell you this, the man that I admire so much in my everyday life, I read his blog every day, is a man named Seth Godin. And he is one of the most successful business bloggers on the planet today. And he wrote a book called Tribes. Well, I read it when I was starting Mrs. Green's World. And it's the quintessence of what you say. Find like-minded people. Show up every day. And really, either build a new tribe or join another tribe. But show up authentically as you. Which, by the way, will lead to incredible business success. You know what I mean? He incorporates the whole spiritual practice, and there are a few people out there that I admire more. He's been on my show, And I mean, when I tell you I read his business blog every day, that's a big commitment for me, every day. And it's just, you would not believe the topics that he covers, and talk about making you think and not telling you what to think. Sometimes I close the blog and I'm like, I want to say, oh, shut up, because I don't even want to have to think about that. So I want to get really personal here now. As a mother, and as this transformation, or you can call it evolution, you can call it journey, I mean, to me, it's all good, from, you know, concrete, linear, social science. You were a scientist, not just a scientist, a master's of science in electrical engineering. I don't think you get more linear than that. How has it impacted you as a parent? What kind of things were happening? Because I think that's relatable to everyone. How did this journey change you in how you showed up on the planet as a mother?
Oh, yeah, that's a deep heart.
I can feel
question.
You thinking.
Yeah,
that makes
you
sense.
Know, honestly, being a parent is the most profound, deep spiritual journey that I have been on.
Totally.
I feel like being a mother and being responsible for shepherding the growth of these small beings into the young adults that they are today really did put my feet to the fire in having to do my own inner healing work, so that, you know, I wasn't perpetuating my own broken places on them. Of course, you know, we do, but
right.
we that's inevitable.
And
no,
they're up for
perfect.
It. That's what I think. We're on the journey
yeah.
together, so they're up for it to help us change.
Yep. So they have been, I would say my kids have been two of my biggest spiritual teachers, and they've been a big part of my commitment to being on this path. And I'm passionate about showing up in the world, because I need to be able to say, I was just telling my son this on Mother's Day, I'm doing and being and doing the best I can in the world, because I want to be able to say to my great-great-grandchildren in my dreams that I used my one wild and precious life the best that I knew how to, and the most that I could love, to help leave a world behind that they could thrive in.
And what a message. I mean, I'm with you. My children have been among my greatest teachers in every way. From the time they were born, it's been an evolution. And my daughter Katie got me very much involved with Agape in Los Angeles, which was transformative. Mm-hmm. And then my daughter and all of my three daughters, it's been an amazing, incredible flow of lifelong learning because of their saying yes to showing up in my life. So we have less than 2 minutes left, which is like freaking me out. And I want to make sure we tell people that one way to begin your journey is to go to GaiaField.net. There's a Facebook page called the Gaia Field Project, which is very, very content rich. Twitter at Gaia Field. It's a beginning way. You can find out more about Leslie, and her last name is spelled M-E-E-H-A-N, at www.lesliemeehan.com. And then I want to talk about the other site, thrivingresilience.org. And I invite all of you to take a look, take a little bit deeper cut, and see what your passion leads to. And Leslie, you get the last word after I talk about the show next week. It's going to be another good one, and I don't even think I know what it is. Oh, I think it's David Orr. It is David Orr, who was at Pachamama as well. And he's going to talk about, about climate change and how and scalable, things that we can do for climate change. Go,
Leslie.
We're all
part of the same tribe. So I want to encourage people to look at Gaia Field to sign up to participate in the Wise USA meditations that we're doing over the next year to help create a place for peace and wisdom in our election process this year.
Thank you for that. I got goosebumps. Peace and wisdom to all of you. Make it a great green, consciously lived week. Leslie, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been wonderful.